Yeah.
We just finished our upper executive session, and just to announce that Mr. McGuffin has accepted the position of executive director for the AATA. Now you gotta work. If you have your review and consideration, possible action for your report.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, thank you once again. I have a few different things that I want to cover today. So I'll begin with kind of an administrative update. It's part of my responsibilities with DPS and being assigned over here as the interim. I think I mentioned at the last meeting that that brings with it a certain amount of audit function. I just wanted to cover some of those things very quickly that I've taken a look at with the help of staff. We have looked at the asset tracking and inventory here. We have made some tweaks and some modifications to what we actually inventory. We've surplused items, and that system is not only was in compliance, we knew where things were. We have accounted for everything. Some things we took off because of their age, and we knew they were at police agencies. They no longer had value. Plus, in many instances, they were low dollar items to begin with. And as an example, we were tracking keyboards and things like that. Well, we've changed some of those, and we put a dollar threshold on it now. So I think that certainly is in order. We've taken a look at classifications and job descriptions here. We had one in particular that we needed to modify. We did that through the with the assistance of human resources at ADOA. We have looked at the required state of Arizona training for each of the AATA employees, and all of them have become current. So for this year, everybody is current with their required training. Records retention in both hard copy and the electronic. Hard copy was pretty easy. That was a function that was started before my arrival. Frank has taken the lead on that. The electronic was a little bit more difficult because of our systems that we use. We couldn't go back a certain number of years and get rid of that data because it affected the current data. So we made a decision to basically retain a lot of our financials and grant paperwork. I think it's probably, for now, that's the safest thing to do, so we don't impact any data that we need now. But that's probably a discussion that ongoing that we'll have, especially after the consolidation with the Department of Insurance. Things as simple as ensuring that each of our employees has authorization and is qualified to drive the state vehicle that is assigned to this agency. That's been completed. And then, of course, there's just ongoing review. Those are maybe some of the low-hanging fruit, but as I stumble upon other things, I generally take a look at it, see what it looks like with policy and procedures. And overall, I would just tell you that I haven't found any significant deficiencies in the agency. We've made modifications to things that made sense, and but overall, I think the agency is really in compliance as best I could tell with what we're doing. So the next thing I want to cover is the fiscal year 21 budget submission update. Along with that budget submission, we created a funding issue, which is basically a request to increase the appropriation what the agency can spend. In years past, that number has been as high as 40% increase that we have asked for, and it has failed the last fiscal year, last five fiscal years. So this year, we wanted to do a little bit of a more conservative strategy, hoping that we could make some inroads in getting that appropriation increased a little bit. So basically, we said no expansion to any of our programs. We were just going to cover vehicle theft task force salary, especially this year because DPS received a sworn 10% raise and civilians a 5% raise, which significantly impacts the task force's ability to pay their people within the grant award. We also wanted to fully fund the vertical prosecution, because they're heavily, they're all, for the most part, they're all personnel costs. And every year, they ask for, those agencies ask for a certain amount, and we have been funding them at a lesser amount. So we wanted to make them whole to cover all of their costs as well. And then another important issue was 8 vehicles for the vehicle theft, for the vehicle theft task force. This agency buys vehicles. They need vehicles to do their job, obviously. We have not purchased vehicles since 2017 for the task force. They have 8 that are either at 100,000 miles or over, or I think they have some that are 120,000 miles or over now. And then we just had a couple nominal increases in that request for case support, which is basically to help any law enforcement agency who has a big operation or something that where they maybe need some overtime or some other assistance. We wanted to be able to fund those things along with some public awareness. So that was the plan going forward, a conservative approach, $1.5 million that represented 28% increase to the appropriation. We had an opportunity, with the director and deputy director from DOI to present our funding issue in front of OSPB. And I thought it went well. And even 2 days later, we met with our analyst assigned from OSPB, Art and I did, and we laid out for her in more specificity exactly what we were trying to accomplish this year. I thought that went well. Art did a tremendous amount of work on the whole package. And then unfortunately, we received word that our funding issue would not be moving forward, that basically we would be getting the same amount that we have received for the last 5 years. So this would be the sixth year with no increase. The downside to this, of course, is apparent. The impact is going to be to the Vehicle Theft Task Force. And there's really no way, I don't think, in my discussions with Captain Ettmeyer, that they don't cut detective positions as a result of this. So I had this discussion then afterward, once we found out it wasn't going to move forward, I had the discussion with Colonel Milstead and Deputy Director Silbert, because the impact is going to be felt by DPS. DPS is going to have to make some of those difficult decisions. And so the Colonel was very interested in this, and he asked me for a one-page briefing paper, which Art and I worked on together. We presented that to the Colonel and the Deputy Director last Friday. And I think the Colonel has his own challenges for DPS when it comes to OSPB, them not wanting to move some of his issues forward, but he was gracious enough to grab onto ours as well. And I think he has some channels that are certainly not open to me to try and get some of those discussions at a higher level and maybe make some inroads. So I don't know that the issue is completely dead yet. It's definitely on life support. And but I don't know what else to do at this point. We made a case with OSPB. We thought we had really good justification, because when somebody is given a raise, you know, the agency is always given the budget to support that raise. But I think it must have been just an oversight. They didn't realize that this agency, the ATA, pays those salaries. So it's unfortunate, but hopefully there will still be some room for some good news to come in. The next thing I wanted to cover was just some agency operations issues. I came in last, I flew in last night from Denver. I spent the last 3 days in Denver at our sister agency up there, what they call CATPAW, which is Colorado Auto Theft Prevention Authority. And just got a lot of different ideas. I wanted to get kind of a little bit of a national exposure. CATPAW is really seen as one of the leaders in auto theft authorities in the nation now. And I'm still trying to process all the information. I'm definitely on information overload from my 3 days up there. They do things a lot differently than we do, partially because they're structured differently, and they have some abilities in just how they're structured that we don't enjoy. But they definitely do some things that I think we can incorporate down here as well. Some more travel that's coming up over the next couple months. Two of us will be headed to the International Association meeting, which is over in San Diego. And then we're going to attend just a small group. Two of us will be going up to Durango, Colorado for Southwestern States Auto Theft Meeting up there. So it's just a time for all of these auto thefts to get together and talk about best practices and things that will hopefully allow each of these agencies to move forward. In front of you, I wanted to bring to your attention, there's a brochure in front of you. It's the at-a-glance document. If you've had a chance to thumb through that, this is something that we came up with that we can pass out at our public awareness events. It's kind of a very quick reference to a snapshot in time of what's going on with auto theft in Arizona. I wanted to compliment Amanda. This in its entirety is done in-house, all of this creation and graphics and everything. The only thing that we don't do is print it. But we thought it was a really good document. It's kind of a living document, one that we can adjust and every 6 months or something to update numbers or provide a different graphic, that type of thing. So we're hoping it gives everybody, you know, in the public that we can get this to, just an idea of what's going on, along with some tips on maybe how not to become a victim. The next thing is we are concerned about the vacancies and expired terms for the board of directors. I think out of the 12 we're going to have by January, we're going to have 6 that are either vacant or expired. And so this is an ongoing issue that the agency has been up against before I got here. But we made another effort with boards and commissions. That's the governor's office who makes those appointments or re-ups the board member as far as another term. On September 10th, Ann and I were on a conference call with a representative of boards and commissions. We walked away from that meeting feeling pretty good too, but I've been burned by that before. But we actually think we're going to get some help this time. So only time will tell, but we have another call scheduled with him, I believe, at the end of September. So coming up in a week or so. Clearly the downside is when we can't, you know, or when we run the option of not having a meeting based on not having a quorum. So, and I know I don't want to waste everybody's time getting here and not having a quorum. So we do the best we can to ensure that we're going to have a quorum. But if you have 12, you have a lot more margin for people not being here. So that's on, those things will be ongoing.
I'm sorry if I could interrupt. Did they have any reasoning for why these vacancies have lasted as long as they have?
Well, they always have reasons, but I think, I guess I'll just come in defense of them and to say that they have a lot of responsibility when it comes to all the boards and commissions that exist in state government, and the governor's office having a hand in selecting those people, vetting them. And one thing that surprised me that I was not aware of is that it's not just boards and commissions who gets the name, does the checks that they need to do, and then makes a decision. That's just phase one. It goes up several layers, and depending on how important the board or commission is to the governor's office, it has a higher level of scrutiny. And then once session starts, see, we think we have a window of opportunity right now, because once session starts and they need to make some appointments, that's when the priority of that staff shifts to those appointments, and boards and commissions for boards like this, I think, takes a back seat at that point.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, my section represents over 40 different agencies. You are not alone in having issues with getting vacancies filled. That's just sort of across the board on all of our client agencies. It's a difficult position for everyone to be in, but no one's picking on you.
Okay. Is there anything we can or should be doing to expedite any of it? Or are hands tied as a board if it's in the state?
Well, certainly you can always contact the governor's office and let them know that
But they're not waiting for us to nominate somebody or no, recommend somebody.
No, we've had people identified for years, I think. Yeah.
Right, and we have those people that are in the queue. We have one, I think they did already reach out to the person after our phone call that has been, what, on for, or at least in the queue for a year or two. Anyway, so maybe we're gonna get a little bit of movement on it. And I would, to answer your question, sir, I think that that's something that we will lead the charge on. And then if we reach a dead end and we believe it's being critical, then I would come to the board chair and ask for maybe a phone call be made or something.
Thank you.
Also wanted to report on just the consolidation efforts with the Department of Insurance. Again, Mr. Greenberg, Deputy Director from DOI and now or soon to be DFI.
Yeah, interim deputy superintendent now, but yeah.
So this has been, I would say, kind of slow in that there's a lot of things to do, and I think with the ATA coming over is a small piece of that. Mr. Greenberg certainly has his hands full with the two larger agencies. We have a staff here has attended certain meetings, mostly on information technology type strategic plans and just consolidating what that's going to look like. And I just think that as time progresses in the coming months, we will be more actively involved in things. But we are taking our lead from the Department of Insurance at this point and just being available to them whenever they have those issues that they need to be resolved with us. So I guess I would just say that I think it's going well at this point, but maybe a little bit slow. Then I wanted to let the board know about some public awareness campaign that we're considering. It is going to occur in November and December of this year. We're going to specifically target vehicle break-ins and auto theft, which are historically high in December and January. But because of the shopping season, we want to roll that back and actually start the campaign in November, because that's when a lot of people are going to the mall. They're putting valuables in the cars in the form of, you know, things that they've just purchased and that. And so we see those break-ins going up, and then potentially we also see auto theft rising too. So we're gonna try and impact that this year. We're gonna do that with billboards on some heavily traveled interstates, both in Phoenix and in Tucson. And we do that not because we wanna ignore everybody else in the state, but for this campaign and the amount of money we're spending, those two MSAs, you know, represent about 86% of our vehicle theft issue with Tucson and Phoenix. So that's why we're putting the money specifically there. We're going to do some, at least we're, you know, our concept is we're going to create some ads to try and drive people to our website. And that will be one of the good metrics where we can determine if the ads are effective or not. It's because we'll be able to monitor the traffic to our website. And then once we get somebody to the website, then we know pretty much everything about them. We know how long they stayed, we know where they went. Did we have them for just a few seconds, or did they actually go around? So all those demographics and analysis are available to us. We're gonna spend about $15,000 a month, $10,000 in Phoenix, $5,000 in Tucson for November and December. And we are working through state procurement to make sure that that everything is, because of the amount of money spent, it's not something we can just go out and contract. So state procurement gave us a state vendor, and they are coordinating our effort. I believe we have a meeting with them this afternoon, as a matter of fact, to see where they're at in the program at this point. And then lastly, I will conclude with calendar year 18, just some initial auto theft numbers. We actually got kind of ahead of, because we got some inside information from Access Integrity over at DPS, and they provided our calendar year 2018 auto theft numbers. And I think as you see because we've already added it to the at a glance brochure, there were 18,294 auto thefts in Arizona in calendar year 18, and that is actually a reduction of 764 thefts from 2017, or it represents a 4% decrease, which is good news. And it's actually, I think, we did not expect that. We thought we had seen the low point in 2015, and then we started seeing like a 3% uptick. And when you look at what's going on around us in the southwestern states, their auto theft is higher than ours is. And so it just kind of showed you that maybe this was an anomaly of us being low, that we were gonna get kind of back in with everybody else. So when we see the dip this year, it's good news for us, of course, but we'll just hope that continues. The rate of theft, which is the number of cars stolen per 100,000 residents, generally parallels the number of thefts, and that's what we saw as well this from 2018. We went from 271 per 100,000 to 261. And so again, that's not unexpected. We expected the rate to be down a little bit lower too. We still don't have the information on where this places us nationally. So our ranking of number 11 in the United States for total volume and 15 for rate is, I don't expect that to change much, but we may make a gain or so. And Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report, unless there's any questions from the board.
Any questions? Thank you for your report. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I just have a few things to report on today. The financial report will go over first, and the spending plan, and then we do have a couple of grants to get the board approved on. First thing is the financial report. This is the report as of August 31st. Schedule 1 is the fund balance report. Line 2 is the total income up through August 31st, $3,345,000. Line 3 is the total number of expenditures, $1.1 million. Line 5, we did have $183 adjustment for prior year. That left us with a fund balance at the end of August of $6,620,000. Schedule 2 is a breakdown of the revenue. Line 1, current year collections, $3,337,000. Line 8, the investment income was $8,800, and that left us line 11 of total income, $3,345,990. Line 12, what we had invested with the treasurer as of August 31st, $6.5 million, and the rate of return, line 13 and 14 for the 1 month and year to date, 2.55%, so we're getting pretty good returns on our investment. Schedule 2.1, just want to go over briefly. The amount that we projected to collect for the first assessment period, line 2, was $3,369,000. What we actually collected, line 11, is $3,337,000. And that represents about 99% of our projection was met. We were about $32,000 short of our projected amount. But just to give the board some historical, the $337,000 that we collected was about $63,000 more than we collected last period. So even though we didn't quite make our projection, within 1% is fine. It's not going to have any negative impact. But we still had the best collection cycle that we've ever had. And if we grow by another $63,000 for the next period, my guess is we'll make our 3% projection for the year. So I'm not overly concerned. And we'll go ahead and we'll take a look at the next collection. In probably March or so, we'll have an idea how that went. We'll be able to report if we made our 3% or didn't. But right now, everything is actually looking pretty good. And just one thing that we are trying to do is we are attempting to get the insurance companies to do most of their payments by electronic means as opposed to checks. And we started that process this assessment period, and we'll put a little bit more pressure on next assessment period. But the results are pretty good. This is the first time that we've had more companies submit payments electronically as opposed to check. We had check total was about $1.4 million. The electronic or ACH total is about $1.9 million. So that's a pretty good amount. And we prefer the electronic method because it's easier. The internal controls are less stringent as far as the chance for fraud or losing checks or whatever. So we're hoping to get everybody on board with the electronic means within the next assessment period. So when we go make our transition to Department of Insurance, we're doing as much electronic as we possibly can. So that's what we're doing. And the companies have been responding to that. So we'll, hopefully that will continue the next assessment period. Schedule number three is the breakdown by appropriation. And just normally I don't go through this line by line, but I just want to mention one thing. Line 12, that's our operating total, is the lump sum basically, at $654,400. One adjustment was made from the last board meeting to this meeting. The lump sum, the original amount as signed into law by the governor, was $651,200. Normally, every fiscal year, there are back-of-the-bill adjustments. The legislature will go ahead and either add or reduce your lump sum, depending on things that are normally beyond the control of the agency, stuff like health insurance, retirement, things of that nature that come up. And so for this particular fiscal year, we had a lump sum adjustment back of the bill of $3,200. That was an increase. So we went from the original lump sum of $651,200 to the current lump sum of $654,400. There was no impact on our grant funding. That didn't come to play. But when we go through the financial plan, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to need to get the board to go ahead and approve the financial plan, because I did make some adjustments on it from the last board meeting. But other than that, those are just the back of the bill adjustments. Schedule 4 is a breakdown of the different activity areas. Line 2, the administrative part of the agency, $47,173. Line 3 is the program's public awareness, $35,667. That left us with total lump sum expenditures of $82,840. As far as the grant programs, the Task Force Q1 grant was paid, $912,500. Vertical prosecution, $148,793. Total grant expenditures, $1,061,000. And once again, that left us with the total expenditures, line 15, of $1.1 million. Line 16 and 17, that's our ratios. Once again, we have a statutory 10% cap of admin cost to actual income, and that's line 16. And currently, we're at 1.41%. And line 17 is our administrative costs as a measure of total expenses, and we're at 4.12%. Now, with the revenue collection basically stopping until the end of the year, the line 16 amount will start to increase a bit, but we project about 6% for the fiscal year, so we're well within our 10% range of administrative cost as a ratio to income. Schedule 5 through 9 just breaks down different program areas. I won't go through those schedules individually. The last schedule I'd like to mention on the financial report is the last one, Schedule 10. That's the non-appropriate funds, in other words, SIMS money. And currently we have $1,432 in the SIMS fund, and in a few minutes, hopefully the board will approve a grant that will zero out the SIMS fund, which you've been trying to get rid of for about 8 years or so. So we've had grant requests come in. So that's what we have currently, $1,400, and hopefully that will disappear here shortly. Schedule 11 is the spending plan. And other than the back of the bill adjustments that I mentioned, we're just executing the spending plan as it's laid out. A couple of key things to take a look at. We started the year with a fund balance of $4.4 million. And if you take a look under June, line 27, projecting a fund balance at the end of the year of about $5.9 million. So the fund balance is going to continue to grow. And that's due to the fact that we're collecting more money than we're allowed to spend currently. So hopefully at some point we'll get the authorization to spend a bit more. But for right now, we're projecting $5.9 million. Mr. Chairman, if I could get the board to approve the spending plan as presented, so we can go ahead and execute it going forward.
Do I hear a motion to approve the spending plan?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, passes.
Thank you. And the last thing I have on my list of things to do would be some of the, we have a couple of grants, and I think you should have a grant memo somewhere
second,
in your,
second green
second,
tab.
The second green tab is the grant memo. It's just four grants. The first grant for board approval is from the Camp Verde Marshal's office. It's a public awareness grant. It's grant number 1867. And the grant request was to purchase one InstaEtch VIN etching system and related supplies. The total grant request was $1,233.26. Total grant request, $1,233.26. The staff recommendation is to fully fund the grant at $1,233.26. Mr. Chairman, would you like to take the grants individually or just go through?
So we just have the...
They're just four, and yeah. they are different. They're not all the same.
Do we have a motion to pass the grant of $1,867 for the Camp Verde Marshals Office Public Awareness Program VIN etching system?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the next grant is a little different than what we had normally been doing. I wanted to cover this one. This is from the Pima County Attorney's Office. Its grant program is vertical prosecution. It's grant number 1853, which is the current vertical prosecution grant. The Pima County Attorney's Office is asking for the board approval to apply the remaining balance from FY19, which is $3,083.45, to the already approved FY20 vertical prosecution grant. They had, my understanding is, the county or had put forth a salary increase for all the employees in the county, and that led to the $3,000 actually shortfall for this year. So what they would like to do is take the $3,000 they had left over from last year and apply it to this year to help fund the pay increase that was granted to them. That's a little bit of a departure. What we have normally done is take the carry forward amount and let them keep the carry forward amount, but then reduce the current year. That's what we had normally done. This is the first time that I can remember that we've had a request of this nature where they want to apply that money due to an increase in salary in the area beyond their control. And the staff recommendation is to approve that. If it's not approved and we go back to what we had done, they're going to have a little shortfall as far as covering the salary in the area for their attorneys for the vertical prosecution for this year. So our recommendation is to go ahead and approve the $3,000 for them to go ahead and use as a part of this year's grant. It doesn't have any negative impact on our agency. They've already got the money, so they just won't return it to us. They'll then keep it and apply it to this year. But I thought we needed to bring that to the board because it's different. It's a departure from what we normally had done probably over the last 4 or 5 years. So, Mr. Chairman, if we could get board, our recommendation is to approve it, if we could get the board to motion that.
My only question would be, is this going to have a negative impact on the amounts moving forward as we switch those funds back and forth?
No, it won't. They can take the $3,000 and apply it to this grant. It won't have any impact on our going forward as far as the money. So we're going to fund the $216,000 that the board approved. And then the $3,000 will already be, they already have that. So that won't have any impact on our payments.
Then they'll be better prepared to handle the shortfall on
yes.
their own.
Correct.
Forward.
Okay. Correct.
Okay. Okay, I'm at a loss as to how to even phrase this.
I would just make a motion to approve grant number 1853, approving the $3,083.45 be applied towards this year's grant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All in favor? Or do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
The last two grants are from the Department of Public Safety, and they are to be applied to the training. There's a training seminar, the ADDIE training seminar, June 8th through the 12th in Laughlin, Nevada, and the ATA would be a co-sponsor to that. So we have two grants to basically cover the training at this point. The first grant request is grant number 1868. This is for the SIMS money. The request is made by DPS, and the grant request is $1,432.16, and the staff recommendation is to fully fund the grant, $1,432.16, to be applied to the AADI seminar in Laughlin. And once again, that money would come out of our SIMS fund, and that will zero out the fund. So we're hopeful that the board will approve that grant.
Is Sounds like there was some collusion on the amounts.
That's exactly what we have. So.
Do we want to handle both of these at the same time since they're both concerning DTS?
Yeah, if you want, that'd be fine. The second one is also from the Department of Public Safety. It's a professional training grant. It's grant number 1869, and this is a grant request for $5,000 to support the ADDIE training seminar to be held in June. And normally this $5,000 is put into facilities, renting of rooms and things of that nature. And we have co-sponsored this conference for the last several times that it's been held. And the $5,000 is normally about what we would do. So we would recommend staff recommendations to approve the $5,000. Now this money would come out of our grant money. This would actually be out of our professional training grant and then not the SIMS money. So this would come out of our own grant money. Just to give the board an idea, if with full approval of all of the grants, that will leave us about $20,000 left for our total grant funding for the remainder of the year, which should be enough if we do. We should be able to cover some of the vignetting systems that we've been getting, and that will leave us money to support some of the training if we get training requests. We won't have a lot of money to do it, but Laughlin is quite a bit cheaper than the original location would have been, Las Vegas. And so hopefully we can take some of that money and maybe in Q2, Q3, and potentially Q4, and put that to training if we get training requests. So even if the board approves the grants, we're not going to be totally restricted. We'll have $20,000 left, so we do have some money to put forward for future events. So, Mr. Chairman, if the board could go ahead and approve those two grants.
Mr. Chairman, I'll need to recuse myself. John, if I recuse, is that going to have an issue with the quorum that we have?
No. So I'll make a motion to approve grant 1868 in the amount of $1,432.16 out of the SIMS fund, and grant number 1869 in the amount of $5,000 from the grant funds.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, it's passed.
If there's no questions on the financial reports, I think I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, public awareness. Armstrong.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, on your blue tab, I've got some materials for you. One was a recent press release from DPS about a task force chop shop case in Tolleson. So, that was a really great case. Great job by the task force. It got a lot of coverage. I saw all sorts of media on it. So great job, as always. Our public awareness efforts, with the weather cooling back down and October being Crime Prevention Month, we've got all sorts of gain and events coming up. I know Amanda's going down south. I know she's going to Casa Grande for several different GAIN events. She's also assisting the first Saturday in September, the Camp Verde Marshal's Office. They're gonna host their first vignetting event with the equipment that you all just approved to fund. So Amanda, as she always does, will go and assist and get them all trained up so they can start utilizing the equipment on their own. And I think they'll be really active in that area. They plan on also kind of sharing it with their neighboring police agencies. So we're really excited to get them up on board. Amanda, I know you've got some other events. If you wanted to add anything, or
St. John's.
Apache County Fair. Yes, Amanda went to the Apache County Fair 2 weekends ago and assisted up there. And that's another agency, St. John's PD. Earlier this year, we funded a vignetting equipment system for them. So Amanda was up helping them and staffed a booth up at the fair. So her October and fall events calendar, I know, is filling up.
Sierra Vista. October 19th.
And some of these are in your packet. We've got different grants. We talked about the grants, the AADDIE seminar in June in Laughlin. The ATA, as you know, we're helping sponsor. We'll have the ability to have a display table. I know they've asked if Director McGuffin can say a few words at opening ceremonies, and we also plan to do our awards ceremony, our awards program on their banquet night, which is Thursday night. So that's still in the plan. We've typically gone up in September. We've never gone in June, so June in Laughlin. Oh, I can't wait.
September's not much better.
Yeah, I know. I don't think any time is any better. And as Jamie mentioned, we've gotten our 2018 stats. We're going to start working on our 2019 annual report this next few months and present that to you when we've got it done. So there's also the U.S. Postal Crimes Training, a free ACPA training. I've got some additional flyers. They're doing that on October 3rd, and that's supposed to be a really great training opportunity. So please share that with your agencies, and unless there's any questions, that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. Next up, Chief Solver with the Law Enforcement Subcommittee report.
We have not met. There's nothing to update.
Thank you. Public Awareness Subcommittee, did we hear anything from Mr. Brogers?
He's in Scotland.
Just rude.
Lucky.
Legislative Subcommittee, we haven't had anything happen more lately, I don't think. So Vertical Prosecution Subcommittee, Kristen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, good morning. I think we'll start on the phone. I think Ryan Gant from Pima County is still on the phone. Do you have anything you want to report, Ryan?
Yes, I said thank you, Kristen. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Just a quick update from Pima County. Some good things have been going on down here lately. I got out of trial. I had two trials in the last 6 weeks against a guy named Brandon Wheeler. This is exactly the kind of offender that, you know, vertical prosecution is designed for, and it's somebody that we want to get through the auto theft program. He's a repeat auto theft offender. One of my cases was a prohibited possessor case with him that was a connect theft to a DPS task force auto theft case. So we had two jury trials with him. Both of them resulted in guilty verdicts, and he's going to do an 8-year sentence in the Department of Corrections. So a good result there. He has numerous priors, both with auto theft as well as other more violent types of offenses. So he's the type of offender we wanted to get off the streets to protect the community a little more. Another case I want to highlight that I prosecuted in the last few months was a result of a plea deal, but I highlight it because I think it's important for the board to know the kind of vertical prosecution and relationships with law enforcement that are the result of this grant. State of Arizona versus Brian Jones. Mr. Jones doesn't have a lot of prior convictions, doesn't have a lot of criminal history, but in the span of a couple of months was involved in two car thefts, two attempted residential burglaries, and then a commercial burglary. In Pima County here, we meet with the DPS task force detectives every couple of weeks. Every 2 weeks, we have a standing meeting where the task force detectives meet with me. But we also invite in other local law enforcement. So there's a group of about 20 of us that meet every couple of weeks. And the Ryan Jones case is a good way to highlight for the board how all of our local law enforcement has worked well through the vertical prosecutor altogether. We had three different agencies involved in this, and through our weekly meetings, we were able to link these cases to Ryan Jones and then connect them up and prosecute them all as one case. So Mr. Jones was sentenced last week to 5 years in the Department of Corrections. Finally, I want to highlight a case that was prosecuted by one of our 25% prosecutors. As you know, we do things a little bit differently. Here in Pima County, we have the full-time vertical prosecutor that just handles all auto thefts. That's myself. And then we have four different prosecutors who 25% of their caseload is vertical prosecution through auto theft. And we do that to allow them to geographically prosecute, meaning each one of them is assigned a different area of town. One of our vertical prosecutors, Dominic Rizzi, had a jury trial a couple of weeks ago on a guy named Corey Poe. Mr. Poe is a repeat auto theft offender with numerous priors. He committed three different thefts of cars from three different dealerships. On two of them, he was caught on camera, which was good, but he wasn't captured. So there was an identity issue. He changed his appearance before he committed the third burglary or third theft of a car from another dealership. He do this by lingering outside of the service area, and when someone had their car worked on, they were waiting to pick it up, and the mechanic brought it up to the waiting area. they would leave the keys in it, which is unfortunate, and Mr. Poe would just sneak in and hop in and drive away. So he was found guilty on all three of those counts, and he's looking at quite a lengthy stay at the Department of Corrections. So I highlight those. I thank the board for your continued support. The vertical prosecution really helps us to put some offenders that need to be held accountable in prison. So thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Thanks for your work. Is Mr. Chavez from Mojave County back on the line?
Yes.
Did you have anything you want to report?
I'll probably have something to report at the next meeting. I'm still pretty new in this position, so I have not had any trials yet. I'm hoping to have some trials done before the next meeting.
All right, thank you and welcome. I know Alan Quist is here from Pinal County Attorney's Office. Do you have anything you want to share with us, Alan?
I do, Kristen. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Pinal County, this quarter we're on track for a record-setting quarter as far as number of convictions go. I've been in this position for about 4 years now, and we're already over 40 convictions, a lot of vehicle theft-related convictions, and I attribute a lot of that, quite frankly, to the quality of investigations that I'm seeing come through. They're getting better. The officers are asking the right kinds of questions to suspects, which is key in auto theft investigations. Someone can be driving a stolen vehicle, and if that's all we have, there's no indicia of theft, there's no statement. Sometimes those can be difficult cases to prosecute, but I'm seeing investigators, officers asking the right questions, taking note of that indicia, of those indicia of vehicle theft, right? And there's a lot of them. So that's good. Got a lot of significant sentences this past quarter. Took a case to trial on a lady who stole multiple vehicles, was trying to traffic in those vehicles. She has multiple priors. Went to trial, week-long trial. Judge gave her 19 years. Aggravated her. Class 2 felony, Category 3 repetitive offender, 19 years, which is one of the biggest sentences I've seen. I was actually recommending around 15 to 20, so the judge kind of he went all out on that. So in Pinal County, the judges do not look favorably upon auto thieves and are willing to lay down some pretty lengthy sentences. So got a lot going on down there, and second Pima County attorney said that we appreciate your support.
Thank you, Alan. I don't think we have anyone else on the phone for vertical prosecutors, right? So for Maricopa County, I don't recall if I said it at the last board meeting, but several of us did go to the training in Flagstaff, and we did get together with most of the vertical prosecutors that were there. We sort of tried to have a vertical prosecutors meeting while we were all up there for the training. Misty Foth, one of our task force attorneys, was planning to be here. Her daughter broke her foot, so she sent me with her notes so she could go deal with that. She did provide me three cases that she wanted to update the board on. One is an individual named Michael Chandler, and that was, she notes, with Detective Patterson, who's here with us. That person was charged with theft of means and a burglary in the third degree, and he did have two priors, which were aggravated assault and kidnapping, and he did plead to a theft of means with one prior conviction, so he was sentenced to 8.5 years in the Department of Corrections. The second case that she noted is that of Ricky Carter, and that was with Detective Charlie Warner. That individual was charged with two counts of fraud schemes and two counts of theft. He had no prior convictions, but what he was doing was selling the same car to multiple people. So he would sell the car, and then he would go steal it back, and then he would sell it to the next person. So he did get supervised probation since he had no priors, but he did plead to a class 3 attempted fraud schemes. And then the last one that she noted was Rhonda Hawkins, and that was with Detective Callister. And that individual, so she was charged with a theft of means, and she had a co-defendant who went out on bench warrant status. And his name was Kloppel. So she pled to an attempted unlawful use, a class six, and got supervised probation since she had no priors. She just got sentenced last month, but Misty just got word that she's been picked up in Oregon. And what she's doing was helping her boyfriend, Kloppel, the person who's on bench warrant status, steal four vehicles, including a semi. So, two of our attorneys just finished an auto theft trial that they tried together. It was theft of means and robbery. So again, just sort of highlighting that there's force involved. And they did get guilty convictions. That also was an unlawful flight. And then another, Valerie, our other task force attorney, she jumped on a trial with an attorney in our repeat offender program bureau, the Rogue Bureau, but it was a theft of means, an unlawful flight, and they also got convictions on all the counts. I just finished a trial. We haven't gotten to sentencing yet. We just finished last week. It was two co-defendants. It was with DPS, not with the task force, but with DPS. And it happened almost 2 years ago. I think I've mentioned it before at meetings where the female driver was on probation for a task force TOMOT case. And she had just been put on probation about a month prior. And then the male passenger was also on probation, but for a drug case. And the DPS trooper just initially was just pulling them over for speeding, but right as he was getting out of his car, the dispatcher told him it was a stolen car. They took off going southbound on the I-17 on a Sunday morning. Went speeds of 110 to 115. And the male passenger actually climbed out the window about halfway, kind of sitting on the window frame, and fired at the two troopers that were pursuing. And then based on the way she was driving during the shootings, she was charged as an accomplice. So they were both convicted of many counts, but the highest count was attempted murder of the two police officers last week, Michelle. But again, just always highlighting the stolen cars are part and parcel of some really dangerous behavior. So, and then we just, one of my attorneys just did a hearing, which it was a 14-year-old who had stolen his grandmother's car, stolen his grandmother's gun, and then the Phoenix police officer tried to stop him just because he was driving with his headlights out, didn't know it was a 14-year-old driving. And he fled, he crashed, and then he shot at the police officers and was charged with attempted murder. He did get direct filed based on the charges as an adult. He didn't have any criminal history, so that was just, they just had a hearing and that was sent back to juvenile court. So that's all I can think of for us for now. Thank
some
you.
Great results, thank you. Mm-hmm. If we could have a report from the Vehicle Theft Task Force, Captain Ettenmeyer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, good morning. My name is Paul Ettenmeyer. I'm a captain and a trooper with the Arizona Department of Public Safety and the task force commander. The task force has 11 agencies represented with 25 personnel funded through the auto grant. We had a couple of personnel issues that popped up. Detective William Pop was transferred on August 24th. To Southern Narcotics just due to the budgetary issues. We didn't receive the funds, so we had to make that tough decision to remove that spot. Detective Nick Davis from Yuma Police Department in June was selected to be part of their violent crimes and crimes against persons squad, basically their homicide unit. We sat on the selection process and have identified an individual from Yuma Police Department to replace him. There is no known date for that transfer yet because of their shortages in patrol, and they're not going to release that person until they have a replacement for that future detective. Also with Tucson Police Department, have mixed emotions on this. Detective Armando Olivas, he's been with the task force since April of 2016. On Sunday, will be promoted to sergeant, so he will leave the task force. So it's good for him, but we're also going to lose a valuable skill set with him. Since our last meeting on May 17th, the task force has recovered 618 stolen vehicles with an estimated value of more than $8.8 million. We served 16 search warrants, and year to date, we have served over 38 search warrants. And since January of this year to yesterday, we recovered 1,123 stolen vehicles with an estimated value of more than $14.25 million in assets. We are not on par. Our recoveries and the value of the recoveries, actually the arrests and the recoveries are actually going to be down this year just due to our personnel issue. We're reducing in size because of the budget issue. However, our value of the recoveries are actually going to, I estimate, is going to probably surpass what we did last year. And last year we recovered $18.7 million, and I'm estimating right now we're probably going to be pushing closer to the $20 million mark in regards to the value of the recovery. And part of this is some of we're seeing a decrease in the trends of the 2000, the mid-90s Honda Accords, and we've actually been recovering several high-end vehicles, and that has boosted up that amount. And in one case, it was over $600,000 in with three vehicles that we recovered, and I'll talk about that case here shortly. On May 30th, Detective Callister worked a case where he wrote three search warrants for three different locations. These locations were basically flop houses, and the main subject had a violent history, was involved in a shooting in Tempe this January. So SWAT served the warrants. In our second location, we ended up having a barricade situation which lasted for about 4 hours. The person was unrelated to that that incident or that subject, but it still took 4 hours to recover that person out of that secondary house, and he was removed with some suggestions from SWAT. On June 10th, this is a case I believe our Pima County vertical prosecutor brought up, was the Pima County detectives investigated a theft ring, which actually stemmed back to 2017, where one of the individuals was sentenced to 11 years in DOC. The second individual received a plea deal and served 1 year. And since he's been out, the Vehicle Theft Task Force uncovered another auto theft ring where he was implicated and alleged to have stolen six vehicles. We ended up recovering three of those vehicles. And on June 14th, we arrested that individual as he was trying to enter into Mexico with one of the vehicles. The second suspect is still outstanding. On June 25th, we received a call from Highway Patrol Metro South Troopers who were following a 2018 Mercedes AMG, which was worth about $155,000. This was stolen from Pleasanton Police Department in California. The Mercedes was tracking this vehicle. We took over the investigation and followed to a location not too far from the Gilbert Police Station off of Warner and Gilbert Road, to an apartment complex. We saw the individual go into the apartment complex in the garage and then come out with a 2017 Austin Martin DB11, which is worth about $240,000. We ran the temporary license plate that was on there. We found out it was registered to another Austin Martin DB11, which was stolen out of Hollywood, or actually Beverly Hills, California. Earlier this year on February 14th. The other Austin Martin, who we ended up recovering that one as well, which was a gray in color, was stolen out of Leesburg, Virginia in March of this year. The value of those three vehicles was over $635,000. So our value of recoveries are going to be increasing due to some of the higher end vehicles that we've been recovering. June 30th, vehicle theft detectives here in Phoenix This was actually a case that Detective Mark Patterson was working. Arrested two individuals, adults and two juveniles. These individuals were suspected in 20 burglaries from the Australia Mountain Ranch area, which is south of Goodyear. They had been also implicated in 16 burglaries in Surprise and numerous burglaries in Mesa in the East Valley area. We were able to find one of the vehicles and set a surveillance on that vehicle that they had stole earlier in one of the burglaries. They were called out once that vehicle started to move. They followed the vehicle out to, and the suspects out to the East Valley area. They launched Ranger to help with aerial reconnaissance and aerial observation surveillance, which they believe actually deterred them from burglarizing and committing more crimes in the East Valley. They followed it back to the West Valley, where when they tried to contain and take the individuals into custody, they ended up ramming one of our detectives as in that process. The detective is not hurt, but we arrested two adults, two juveniles, and recovered four guns that were stolen, two out of Mesa, one out of MCSO, and one out of Surprise. One of the juveniles was on pretrial release and had stolen a gun from Maricopa County. And this was Detective Patterson's case. July 7th, this was a series of cases that we worked with MPD involving some identity theft, and we ended up recovering these four cases stemmed in Tucson and three of them here in the Phoenix metropolitan area. And we worked with the Department of the Inspector General from ADOT, and we identified through the identity thefts of about 140 victims, which they ended up stealing close to $500,000 in cash from these victims, 13 stolen vehicles, and 8 suspects total. On July 26th, we received a call from our counterparts in California at San Bernardino County that they had been watching a stolen vehicle with a VIN switch come to Arizona the night before. They had a search warrant on that vehicle for the tracker. They asked for our assistance to replace that tracker because we were in Arizona. We assisted with writing another search warrant. While we were waiting for the search warrant, we noticed a separate vehicle that was with that vehicle. It was a black Escalade. We determined that that vehicle, that black Escalade, was actually stopped by Highway Patrol earlier in April, and the suspects that were in that vehicle were arrested for drug transportation, where they seized more than 40 pounds of marijuana up outside Kingman. The vehicle was not seized because there was a lien to that, but that vehicle was implicated in that that particular case in April. That vehicle was stopped by a Highway Patrol canine that early morning hours before we located it, coming into California, and we assumed that it was traveling in tandem since it was the same time that that vehicle was being tracked, the other vehicle was being tracked. We amended our warrant, we placed a tracker on that vehicle. That vehicle was located in Texas the next morning, just outside El Paso. They followed that vehicle. Texas State Troopers out there tried to stop it, was involved in the pursuit, and there was 8 undocumented individuals that were escaped from that vehicle, and that vehicle was also being used for human smuggling. And then one more, was mentioned in regards to that press release on August 14th. We received a call for assistance from, was it Avondale? They had a low jack hit on a car. It was a Mercedes-Benz. It was just outside of their jurisdiction, the other side of the roadway. They were not able to find that vehicle for some reason. It was actually in a vehicle. When they contacted us, we were able to locate it in the next property over. Since the vehicle was on private property in an enclosed gate, we ended up writing a search warrant. When we wrote the search warrant and we executed the search warrant, we recovered 10 stolen vehicles off that property. And that individual was the property owner was arrested and taken in custody and charged with a chop shop, as well as for the 10 counts of vehicle theft. We did write a press release on it, and that's where that we got press off of that through that as well. One of the things that I'm going to start doing is writing more press releases so that we can get the word out on what the vehicle theft task force is and also what the auto theft authority is as well. Do you have any questions or comments, concerns?
Mr. Chairman, if I may. Thanks, Captain. I just wanted to point out the captain does know this, but the trial that I mentioned that I just finished last week, it was not a task force case. However, a task force detective happened to be on my witness list because he was working off duty that day that it happened, and it was Detective Mulvihill. So he joined in the search for the suspects after they bailed out of the stolen car. This was a 97 Honda Accord, and so it did have the ignition on the floorboard, et cetera. And I didn't really have auto theft detectives on my case. We just had the investigators and the troopers from Highway Patrol. So I reached out to Detective Mulvihill and I asked him, would you be willing to talk about some of the general auto theft issues with this stolen car to kind of explain to the jury what all of these things mean? So because we also had a jiggle key charge, and he, on his own, he went out to the DPS impound lot. He looked at the ignition himself because he said he'd be more comfortable if he saw it himself. And he did come into court and he testified just sort of generally about some of the things that they're looking at. He looked at the photos from our case and talked about it. And I just felt he did a really nice job of making the jury understand what they were seeing in these photographs. So I really did appreciate that, and it was so helpful to me that I said, hey, I know who I can call because he was on my witness list. So thank you for that and for making him available.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board?
Great results. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman,
thank you. Call to the public. Hearing none. I think we can adjourn our meeting. The next meeting is November 15th, right here. Thank you.